This is Rush to Reason.
You are going to shut your damn yapper and listen for a change, because I got you pegged, sweetheart. You want to take the easy way out because you're scared. And you're scared because if you try and fail, there's only you to blame. Let me break this down for you. Life is scary. Get used to it. There are no magical fixes.
With your host, John Rush.
My advice to you is to do what your parents did. Get a job, sir.
You haven't made everybody equal. You've made them the same, and there's a big difference.
Let me tell you why you're here. You're here because you know something. What you know you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life, that there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there. It is this feeling that has brought you to me.
Are you crazy?
Am I? Or am I so sane that you just blew your mind?
It's Rush to Reason, brought to you by Absolute Electrical Heating and Air, with your host, John Rush.
All right, welcome everybody. I am your host, John Rush, Rush to Reason, KLZ560. Thanks for joining us. And without further ado, let's get right into it as we do every Thursday at this time. Dr. Kelly Victory joining us, as well as Steve House. Get both of you up. So ladies first, Dr. Kelly, how are you today?
I am well. Well, although it's really been a crazy day with all this stuff coming in from the Supreme Court, lots to talk about.
Things are good,
and I think the times, they are a-changing.
All right, Steve House, same. Welcome. How are you today?
You know, it's kind of a half and half. You know, I was glad to see what happened with the Supreme Court on one hand. On the other hand, I'm really disturbed that they're going to take it out on healthcare workers. I think that's a huge mistake, and I think we're going to pay for that in availability of resources on the hospital side, for sure.
Well, and we're going to talk about some of those things today. So, guys, let's get right into it. So, first off, and Steve, since you're sort of our legal, technical guy that watches sort of the book end of this, if you would, let's talk about that for a moment. They did strike down the mandate for private businesses, but to your point, held up the hospital side of the fence, or, you know, the medical worker side of the fence. Why, I mean, I guess you probably can't answer why, but what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think what the Supreme Court did was they looked at the role of OSHA, and OSHA doesn't really have a role that would encompass all the risk you would have for COVID, right? They made the point that you can get it at home, you can get it at school. It's not just at work, so they think that's stepping outside their boundaries. But on the other hand, HHS, their job is strictly involving healthcare and the health and wellness of our healthcare system and the people who have to use it. So they believe that that guy has the authority to establish a certain set of criteria, a.k.a., you know, they can make rules about, you know, gloves, about the thread count of gowns. They can make all kinds of rules in healthcare that apply to safety. So that's why I think they did it to healthcare and not to, you know, the average worker.
Kelly, you're in the healthcare end of it. What are your thoughts?
Well, I agree with Steve. The bottom line is, John, they have frequently used the purse string, the reimbursement mechanism of Medicare and Medicaid as a cudgel to beat hospitals and healthcare workers into submission on all kinds of things. So they are able very easily to say, you know, look, you don't have, you can do whatever you want, hospital. You can do whatever you want, you know, nursing facility. But if you want to get reimbursed by Medicare and Medicaid, you're going to comply with this mandate. I think it's really backhanded.
I agree.
Think it's slimy, frankly, as a way to do things. Because either you are following the science on something or you aren't. The idea of using the purse strings as a way to try to, you know, get somebody to comply, I think really speaks to the fact that this is highly political and not scientific at all.
All right, knowing the things go ahead, Steve, go ahead.
I was going to say, take it a step further, right? I mean, we constantly are barraged by news that says hospitals are running out of beds and, you know, there's not enough ICU beds and there's so many people in ER. So the one thing you do is you restrict the availability of workers in that setting by making this mandate when you know people are not going to comply at 100% level. I mean, the staffing problems they're going to create for this, while they're saying on the other side of their mouth, our biggest problem is resources and availability of beds. It's insane.
I couldn't agree with you more, Steve. You're spot on. And again, some of the stuff we've done along these lines is just total craziness. Let's get into a few technical questions. I had a few things get sent in prior to the show today. So, Dr. Kelly Victory, I'll start with you. Can you get, and I know we maybe mentioned this in the past, so if we're repeating, it's because folks are still asking similar questions. Can you get Omicron after having Alpha or Delta or any other of the variants of COVID, because it seems like a lot of folks are. But my question is, did they really have it the first time around? Do they really have it now? I mean, you know, we've all known all along that, you know, flu and other things that have been going around. And just because somebody got a positive test, did they in fact have COVID prior, or do they even have it now?
A great question. So a couple of thoughts on this. Number one, can you potentially get reinfected with Omicron having had one of the previous variants? The answer is yes, although it is extraordinarily unlikely. With this caveat, we know that people who had the original Wuhan strain or the Alpha strain or Delta or whatever it was, Lambda, have incredibly strong immunity. And those people are not coming down with Omicron. Those folks who are saying that they have, it's generally attributable, John, to what you're suggesting, which is that one of the tests was a false positive. That's with the caveat. People who have had one of those previous strains and then go on to get vaccinated, those people have a higher risk of getting Omicron.
Okay.
And we have now seen a multitude of studies. A large study came out a couple of weeks ago from the University of Copenhagen in Denmark, showing a nearly four times higher risk if you had COVID, got vaccinated. You have a higher, four times higher chance of getting Omicron than if you had gotten COVID and didn't get vaccinated.
Okay.
So there's clearly something about the vaccines that is putting people who previously should have had natural immunity because they had and got over COVID seems to be suppressing their immune response. We saw the same thing now out of Iceland, out of Ireland, out of the UK. We're seeing it Israel, that people who are vaccinated are in fact coming down with Omicron, even if they had had a previous strain of COVID.
Steve, you've been following a lot of this very closely as well, not only in what, you know, Dr. Kelly said, but in a lot of the other information that, you know, gets sent to you and I on a regular basis as well. What are your thoughts?
Well, I've read the studies as well. So, you know, the Danish study, the one out of Copenhagen, was fairly clear. There was another one today. They talk about the vaccines actually having negative effectiveness, negative 76% on the part of, I think it was Pfizer and Moderna, somewhere around 39%. How do you get a negative effectiveness? Well, it's exactly what Kelly's saying. Once you've taken the vaccine, if you've actually increased your risk to get COVID, in this case Omicron, then you have a negative factor in terms of the effectiveness of the vaccine. But the second piece of this is there was a study, and I think there were two now, that suggested that if you had a prior case of COVID, that you had a 25% chance of getting Omicron. Now, that's way lower than if you've been vaccinated or any of those other things, but the margin for error in getting COVID a second time, because this one's so different, was a little higher. I think it was 91% against before, and now it's 75% against now. So, yeah, could somebody get it twice? I think it's possible. But it's not probable.
Okay. Dr. Kelly, there's folks asking too, and this is a question even I have personally, is, you know, can you tell the difference between the regular old flu strains we've had running around, you know, really for quite some time now, since, as far as I can tell, forever, and COVID? In other words, is there a definite difference in symptoms when it comes to one versus the other, or is it really hard to tell?
It's very hard to tell. They're incredibly similar types of symptoms. Both influenza and COVID have fever, for example, headache, body aches, congestion, cough, sore throat. So a lot of overlap. The good news about Omicron is that, in distinction to the previous mutations or the previous variants of COVID, Omicron does not have an affinity for lung tissue. And what that means is that people are far less likely to get that deep hacking cough. They are far less likely to end up with problems that will end them up in the ER or in the hospital because they are short of breath or have fluid in their lungs, inflammation of the lungs, those sorts of things. The previous mutations of COVID actually bound to a particular receptor in the lung tissue. That's not the case with Omicron. So while there's a lot of overlap between COVID symptoms and influenza symptoms, The good news still is that Omicron is far less severe and tends to stay in the upper airways. Again, lots of nasal congestion, lots of sore throat, lots of that sort of thing, stuffiness, runny nose, that kind of stuff, but far less of the lower respiratory symptoms.
Okay. This may go along with my next question, and this is for both of you. I'll start with Dr. Kelly. Steve, you can follow up if you would. And that is, I said yesterday, because of some of the reports coming out now, even Kyle Clark, who is not my favorite guy in town as a reporter, is concerned, but even he came out yesterday and tweeted that 75% of cases in Colorado of people hospitalized with COVID went there for something other than COVID. They ended up having COVID, and so they're listed now as a COVID patient, but when in fact we really have about, you know, 25 to 30% of patients that are actually there. So the question that I guess I have, Dr. Kelly, for you and Steve follow up is, if Omicron isn't as bad, which I believe you, it's not. I've seen that for my own two eyes. Why do we still have people then going to the hospital? I get the labeling of the COVID, but aren't we being really deceptive when it comes to telling people how full hospitals are based upon what, you know, the numbers that I just gave out, which I believe Kyle Clark is correct, by the way?
Absolutely, John. And I've been reporting on this from the very beginning of the pandemic. I've said, you know, one of my taglines was the virus is real, the statistics are not. I've been saying it from the beginning for exactly this reason. 100% of people who show up in the ER and 100% of people who get admitted to the hospital, regardless of the reason they went there, get tested for COVID. Because so then if their test comes back positive, even if they have not one symptom of COVID, they will get listed as a COVID admission.
Okay.
Same information, the exact same data just came out of University of California, San Francisco. They looked at all of their, quote, COVID admissions in January and came to this same conclusion. Of all of their, quote, COVID admissions, 70% of them were actually there and admitted for something else. It may have been a heart attack, stroke, gunshot wound to the chest, you name it. And they incidentally tested positive for COVID. So it is absolutely disingenuous. It is intellectually dishonest when they are reporting these numbers and acting as if the hospitals are overrun with COVID patients, because that simply isn't the case.
Steve, you track this data like me on almost a daily basis. I mean, we've been seeing this now for a while, but is this not... I mean, I don't want to know if criminal is the right word, but in a sense, they're just flat out lying to the public. Are they not, Steve?
Well, I think they are lying to the public. They're lying because they have a vaccine agenda. You know, Biden continues to say it's a pandemic of the unvaccinated. We know that's not true. In fact, in Israel and places that are highly vaccinated, it's far more vaccinated people who are in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, people, part of this problem is not only these data, but the way we talk about this. People freak out when they think they have COVID. You know, they didn't freak out when they thought they had a flu or a cold in the past.
Right.
But, you know, somebody who's in their mid-50s or early 60s is in reasonably good shape. You know, when you got a flu, you stayed home, right? And you took flu.
You dealt with it.
You know, that's
it. Right.
But now people are afraid that there's this, you know, creepy little thing called COVID that's going to overwhelm your body and kill you. And, you know, if you're not vaccinated, it makes it even worse. I mean, they're just scaring the living heck out of people.
I agree.
They have any wonder why so many people show up at ER just to get a COVID test? It's crazy.
I agree. All right. That's a great break, folks. We'll come right back. If you got a question for Dr. Kelly or Steve, please text us 307-200-8222. Absolute Electrical Heating and Air is coming up next, folks. And again, I say it all the time. I've been saying this now for a week because on Monday we learned from Lewis, the owner there, that if you buy a new furnace right now, they'll give you their air purification system, the UV light, with that furnace purchase. 720-526-0231 or find him at klzradio.com.
Back when he had one service van and no money, Lewis knew he had one shot at success: happy customers. A lot of HVAC companies offer what Lewis likes to call the taillight guarantee, meaning once you watch them drive away, you're not getting any more help. Even before Absolute became an HVAC company, back when they only offered electrical services, Lewis made a different kind of promise. From the call to your care, we'll be there 24/7. To this day, you can ask anyone at Absolute about their top priority as a company, and they will start talking about customer service. Lewis never lost sight of that one key to success as he continued to add new services. Even now that Absolute offers boiler services, a famously hard-to-find skill set known for unresponsive technicians, Lewis only hires people who commit to their customers long-term. Absolute Electrical Heating and Air will come back long after their taillights disappear. Schedule an appointment 24 hours a day, 365 days a year at absolutefix.com.
For quality and service beyond compare, call Absolute Electrical Heating and Air.
All right, folks, affordable interest mortgage. Ask about the all-in-one loan, by the way. If you've got a mortgage and you're looking to get that payoff faster, and then especially if you're a self-employed individual like me and you want to use that for other things that, you know, really would benefit you as an owner, please talk to Kurt about that today. 720-895-0500.
Rates are low, but are you still paying too much interest? Why continue to pay most of your interest up front like a conventional loan when you can use the asset manager to save thousands in unnecessary interest costs? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. The asset manager is a simple interest loan, which means when your payoff decreases, your payment decreases, and so does your interest. Our clients are paying off their home in half the time. They're not changing their spending habits, and they have access to their equity for 30 years, even after it's paid off. Take AIM, 720-895-0500. Think about it. This simple interest loan allows you to own your home faster, access your equity for 30 years, which means never having to refinance over and over and over again to pay off debts or for home improvements. No more requalifying, no more additional cost. Call 720-895-0500. Affordable Interest Mortgage, and see for yourself. You're in control, not the bank. NMLS 298191, regulated by DOR, Equal Credit Lender.
All right, folks, G-Reminders, get that calendar under control, the reminders of, I should say, so that people show up when you want them to. You can do that with G-Reminders. Find them at rushtoreason.com and click on G-Reminders.
Let your clients book their own appointments using G-Reminders online scheduling. You and your staff spend hours a week scheduling appointments. Now is the time to automate your scheduling and put an end to all the wasted time. Don't worry about giving up control of your calendar. With all the options available, you're always in total control of your time. Try it out for free. Go to greminders.com/KLZ and sign up for a free trial. That's the letter G, reminders.com/KLZ.
No liberal media bias here. This is Rush to Reason.
It is, and we are back. I'm your host, John Rush, Rush to Reason. Dr. Kelly Victory with us today, along with Steve House. We do this pretty much every Thursday during the first hour. Dr. Kelly, there's a listener out there that asked, and we are hearing different things along these lines on a routine basis. Are there new COVID symptoms to be watching for? For example, this person is asking about possible hair loss.
I have heard this question about hair loss more frankly from the vaccines, interestingly, than from COVID itself. And I haven't seen any compelling research articles on this. What I can say is this. When people become ill with anything, it doesn't matter if you have a bad influenza, a bad case of mononucleosis, lots of bad illnesses, in addition to many bad traumas. If you get admitted to the hospital for a bad car accident and have a big surgery, those sorts of things. Any of these sorts of insults, and I'll use that term broadly when it comes, can result in temporary hair loss, what we call alopecia. It was first seen and documented, interestingly, in World War II fighter pilots who came back from war, and then some weeks after they got back and were finally safe and didn't have, you know, guns shooting at them, started losing their hair. It's a temporary thing, and it's a response to overwhelming stress. And when I say stress, when we say stress in a medical term, we don't necessarily mean just psychological stress. We can mean anything that puts an undue strain on the body. So having a bad illness, sometimes it'll be pregnancy related, related to, you know, hormone fluctuations, certainly trauma, but any type of bad viral illness could result in hair loss. The great news is, they are almost without exception temporary, and as soon as your body sort of recovers from that overwhelming stressor, the hair returns.
Okay. Next question for Dr. Kelly. Steve,
hey,
go ahead, Steve. Go ahead.
So I actually know about three or four people. All of them are women who have had significant hair loss, either post-COVID or post-vaccine, like Kelly's saying.
Oh, wow.
It's the only thing that makes sense. You know, and I guess it stops after some period and they start getting back. And I think Kelly's right. I mean, you know, under stress. But I have definitely talked to people who at least anecdotally believe it's true.
Okay. All right. It's the first time I had actually heard that. Dr. Kelly, after testing positive for COVID, and we've talked about some of those tests already, even in today's program, but how long should someone wait to see if they're negative? You know, do they do it when they start feeling better? Do they just continue to do self-tests at home? Do they not test at all? What are your thoughts there?
I think there's absolutely no reason to keep testing. When you come down with a virus, whether it's influenza, the common cold, any other virus, once you don't have symptoms, once you aren't running a fever anymore, you aren't actively coughing and sneezing and blowing your nose every 15 minutes, there's no reason to believe that you are still shedding active virus. We know that all of the tests used currently can stay positive for a matter of months following infection. It isn't meaningful. It doesn't mean you're still actually shedding virus. They finally came out and acknowledged that at the CDC. Dr. Walensky finally came out and said what we've known from the beginning, which is that the tests can remain positive for months. She said 12 weeks. I think it's actually longer than that. And I don't see any reason to continue to test whatsoever. If you test positive, you wait until your symptoms are essentially resolved, which means no more fever, no more cough, in the same way that you would if you had a child at home with chickenpox. When would you send that kid back? Well, when the open sores are cleared up and the kid doesn't have a fever anymore.
Correct.
Same thing.
When you know he's not spreading it anymore, you send him back. Who cares?
Exactly.
All right, Steve, when it comes to, you know, some of these, there's just so much information now when it comes to the vaccines, and we're learning more and more every day, and I know that the press and others out there try to suppress some of the really good solid data that we've got coming out. But I guess dumb question on my part for you, and you see as much of this as I do, why would anybody right now, knowing all of what we know, get either an initial vaccine or get boosted for one they've had in the past?
Well, they shouldn't. I wouldn't. I know people who've had Omicron and tested positive for it. It's a pretty damn bad cold. I mean, it does get to be kind of nasty, but I don't think the vaccine helps them at all based on the data. In fact, it probably makes it worse for them. So, you know, even Pfizer's CEO, if you saw that video of Pfizer's CEO talking about, you know, the first shot wasn't enough, the second shot didn't help that much either, and the booster's not working. I'm like, what is this guy selling? Is he trying to sell me on his treatment for COVID now because it's $500 and some a pill? He's telling me the vaccine. I mean, he basically dished his own vaccine. So I don't know why anybody would trust any of these vaccines at this point.
By the way, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Dr. Kelly, again, when it comes to the vaccines and what, you know, I just mentioned to Steve, you know, your thoughts on all of that. Again, I'm not trying to be, you know, how should I say this? I'm not trying to, you know, tell somebody what to do medically speaking, but people that have asked me personally, family members and folks that I know, you know, straight up, and I know they're healthy individuals, my answer to them has just been, why do you need this? Why do you need a vaccine?
Well, I would advise somebody to apply a very well-reasoned and informed risk-benefit analysis. Early on, 2 years ago, when we were dealing with a strain of this virus that was very, very different, and where people there, if you were in one of those high risk categories, if you were an 80-year-old person or a morbidly obese person, somebody in a high risk category, you could have made the argument that, well, it might be worth you taking the risk of one of these highly experimental vaccines, given your relatively high risk of having a rough go of it if you got COVID. Now, fast forward 2 years when we're saying, first of all, we know who the at-risk people are. We also know that the vaccines simply are not effective in stopping people from contracting Omicron. And furthermore, we know that the signs and symptoms and the trajectory of Omicron as a virus is really quite mild. So I would be hard-pressed to recommend that anybody go and get vaccinated now, given, number one, the weakening of the virus overall, the far less severe symptoms, And add on top of that the fact that we now know very clearly, and this isn't my opinion, this is the CDC, the FDA, and all of the vaccine manufacturers acknowledge that the vaccines will not prevent you from contracting the virus. Given all of those things, when you apply that to a risk-benefit analysis, I don't see how you can come to the conclusion that it's in your best interest to take a vaccine.
And
you know what, John?
I agree. Go ahead, Steve.
You know, obviously we saw this week there was hospital data released on side effects from vaccines. I mean, and the numbers were really high. I mean, high enough all by themselves. Forget VAERS, but the hospital data was high enough that a vaccine should have been rejected and taken off the market
right.
based on just that data. So you're risking the side effects. I had one side question for Kelly. Kelly, I've been hearing about neuritis for people who are getting Omicron, where they have unusual back pain, leg pain. Have you seen that? Because that's a question that people have been texting me about, and I wondered.
I have not seen it. Not only have I not seen it personally, I haven't heard it amongst my entire very extensive group of, you know, folks who I speak with on a daily basis who are treating patients all around, you know, the country. Mostly what I hear about Omicron is severe headache, a lot of congestion, sinus pressure, night sweats. Interestingly, very few reports of loss of sense of taste and smell, which was very, very common with the previous strains, not hearing that with Omicron at all, and symptoms that generally resolve overall, the bad symptoms in a matter of 3 to 4 days, but some lingering issues with this congestion that could go on for a couple weeks. Neuritis, those sorts of things I hadn't been hearing.
Okay. I know we talked testing a moment ago, and I know you guys' feelings on it, mine as well, but we still keep getting this question, and because it's now out in the public, and even the CDC has even said some things along these lines, and that is, do you now with Omicron, Dr. Kelly, test nose, throat, or throat, then nose? What do you do?
Or does it even matter? I don't think it really matters. Truly, I think that we are so over-testing. I guess that, you know, one of the things you learn when you're a first-year medical student is never to order any test, the results of which will not change your action.
Okay.
So if I had a cold right now or, you know, congestion or headache, and I said, well, gosh, if I run in and test for Omicron, and it comes, or I test for COVID, and it comes back positive, what would I do differently? And the answer is absolutely nothing.
Good point.
Absolutely nothing, okay? There's nothing I would do. Here's the deal. If I come down with a virus, whatever virus it is, if I have a fever, if I have a headache, I take Tylenol and ibuprofen. If I have, you know, a cough, I take a cough suppressant. If I have nasal congestion, I take a decongestant. If I have a runny nose, I take an antihistamine. I do the exact same thing. So knowing that I had COVID would change absolutely nothing about what I would do. People say, yes, but you wouldn't go out in public. Well, here's a newsflash. I don't go out when I have a cold either if I can avoid it. If I'm sick, I generally try to stay away from other people and not spread it around.
Good point.
So in my mind, we are wildly over-testing. It's one thing if you're going to test because it's going to change the course. You're going to say, wow, if I knew I had COVID, then I would absolutely, you know, do X, Y, or Z differently. But that's not the case. And so you see people constantly running out, say, oh my God, I've got to get a test. I'm saying, why? They say, because I don't feel good. I say, okay.
Yep. Another question.
Really
go ahead.
You know, there's absolutely nothing about it.
Go ahead, Steve.
One other question that comes up, because Kelly's right about the headaches, right? I mean, the headaches are really bad. I heard from a doc I know, Kelly, a doctor, an epidemiologist in Denver, something I had never heard before in healthcare, and I want to verify with you. He said that when you have a bad headache, it is okay to take both Tylenol and ibuprofen to help get rid of that headache and a fever. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. They work far better in synergy, not just a headache, Steve, anything, body aches, fever, any of those things. They're completely different classes of medications. What you can't do is take both ibuprofen and aspirin.
Right.
They are both anti-inflammatory.
Right.
So you cannot
take two
non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. But you can take ibuprofen, which, you know, brand name Advil, or Aleve, which is Naprosyn. You can take that along with Tylenol. They actually work far better in synergistically than either one alone for any of these things, mm-hmm. fever, headache, right. body aches, all of those things.
And Dr. Kelly, the way I've always looked at it or felt about it is they're attacking two different things that are sensing the pain you have. Am I correct in how I'm kind of a layman's terms? Is that right in saying it that way?
Yes, they act in totally different pathways. Okay. Is the answer. They act in and so Steve, sometimes you can tell people you can take them at the exact same time,
or alternate.
Or since both drugs are every 8 hours, you can take one and then 4 hours later take the other, and then 4 hours later you're back to the first one, and then four, so that you end up taking something every 4 hours. Makes zero difference. But they do work better synergistically.
All right, we're going to take a break. Kelly and Steve House, both Dr. Kelly and Steve House, the question that keeps coming in, we're going to ask this as soon as I come back, is the monoclonal antibodies. How do you get them? Why is the Biden administration hoarding them? Lots of questions there. We'll talk about that as soon as we come back. Michael Bailey Law, Mobile Estate Planning is next. And we heard from Michael directly yesterday. Hey, just don't be that guy that leaves his estate in disarray, which really then does affect your family in a very negative way. Get that handled now. KLZradio.com, 720-394-6887.
The final gift you give your family, making the hard decisions ahead of time so they don't have to. Your estate plan with Michael Bailey Law covers every important decision your family would need to make in a crisis, preventing unnecessary conflict by making sure they know what to do. These aren't difficult decisions for you. It only takes a few minutes for you and your spouse to tell Michael Bailey who should take care of financial decisions, who should handle medical decisions, whether or not you want to be kept on life support, and what should happen to your assets in the event of your death. With Michael Bailey's help, you and your spouse can make these decisions in a short amount of time without a lot of emotion involved. But for your family members, it would not be so easy. Protect your loved ones from making last-minute decisions on your behalf. Set up a free, no-obligation consultation with KLZ's mobile estate planner, Michael Bailey, now. At klzradio.com/estate.
Golden Eagle Financial, Al Smith. Get together with him on your planning of 2022 and beyond when it comes to finances. klzradio.com is where you find him, or call directly 303-744-1128. And please make sure you tell Al that you heard from me.
Don't let the IRS define your retirement. Founder of Golden Eagle Financial, Al Smith, will help you develop a long-term strategy so that less of your income will be taxed. Depending on your age, your income could be nearly tax-free by the time you reach 72. Timing matters. You need a financial advisor who specializes in creating tax-efficient retirement plans. An initial visit with Al will establish what you want your retirement to look like, how much income you'll need, and your risk tolerance. Through patient listening, Al can assist you in creating a plan that's based on your unique circumstances while allowing for unforeseen events that may require increased income. Learn how your retirement can become tax efficient. KLZradio.com/money. Advisory services offered through Foundations Investment Advisors, an SEC registered investment advisor.
Before you sell a house, you clean up the front to maximize the sale price with curb appeal. Before you sell a business, you get organized so buyers can see their potential earnings clearly. Buyers want to purchase an investment, not a job. To make your company more attractive to a buyer, your business needs to run smoothly without you. Hire John Rush as your personal business coach before you sell to maximize your profits. Email John at rushtoreason.com for one free session.
Stay up to date with Rush to Reason after the show on Twitter at Rush to Reason.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. We're back. Dr. Kelly Victory with us as she is on Thursday. Steve House with us this week as well, so appreciate both of them joining us. Okay, so as we talk about monoclonal antibodies, we'll start with you, Dr. Kelly. First of all, I think folks need a better explanation as to what are they, how do you get them, do you have to have a doctor's prescription if you've got COVID, and can you get them even if you haven't had COVID, and is there any benefit to doing so?
Well, there would be no benefit to taking monoclonal antibodies if you weren't actively ill with COVID. People need to understand conceptually what you are doing is essentially, borrowing or taking antibiotics that have already were created in a laboratory to try to fight off an illness that you presumably have at the moment.
Okay.
So, you know, they can't be taken prophylactically or something. They don't work that way. Why aren't they readily available? Well, it's largely because the Biden administration has really taken over control of them. Prior to September of last year, states were able to order whatever they felt that they needed based on their own incidents and the case numbers and things of that sort. Back in September, the federal government, really the Department of Health and Human Services under direction of the CDC, took over the supply and said, largely because there were Florida and six other southern states, they felt were using a disproportionate amount of the monoclonal antibodies, and that, quote, wasn't fair. Mm. So they wanted to make sure that they took over control where they were going, or that's what they said. I think it was more political than that, because it just happened to be the states that they were pulling them back from were the states that were actively pushing back on things like the mask mandates and lockdowns and school closures.
Right.
So the Biden administration took over, and it's been very, very difficult for states to get what they need. Now, in the past month, they've essentially stopped sending them out at all, citing the fact that they don't believe the monoclonal antibodies are effective against Omicron. So it's been extremely difficult for us to get our hands on the supplies that we need for monoclonal antibodies.
All right, one other quick follow-up question somebody texted in is this person says they've heard that these are made out of mouse proteins instead of human. Is that true or not?
Well, they are created, you know, the idea of using convalescent plasma back in the day, and we've done that for well over 100 years, where you actually take antibodies from someone who has had and recovered from an illness, and you give them directly to somebody who's sick. We've done that for many, many different kinds of both bacterial and viral infections. Monoclonal antibodies are simply created in a laboratory. They are made in a lab, so rather than coming from an individual who had COVID, they actually manufacture these in a laboratory. I am unaware of them using a mouse line of cells. I don't know that to be true, but I honestly have to say I'm not sure where the cell line comes from which the monoclonal antibodies were created.
All right, makes sense. Steve, follow up on that as well, even including what the Biden administration is doing.
I think the mouse cells came from a wet lab in China, and they manufactured the monoclonal antibodies at the Wuhan technology lab over there. So, you know, you never know what to trust. I have heard that there's been a significant drop-off in the ability for the monoclonal antibodies to help somebody with Omicron. Now, obviously, you don't get as sick with it. We know that supply has been an issue. I mean, Ron DeSantis down in Florida, as the governor, actually started acquiring it on his own. I mean, he made a really smart move doing it, because especially if you've got an immune system problem, if you're on immunosuppressant drugs and things like that, I mean, monoclonal antibodies is a good solution. I've not ever heard either that it was done through, you know, mouse lines or anything like that, but clearly it was a big help. It's a far cry better than remdesivir is, which we know is a toxic, ineffective, expensive drug that really should never have been used.
All right, question for both of you. Steve, I guess let's Dr. Hill, let's start with you. When it comes to the different variations, because I keep hearing from different people, oh, I had Omicron, oh, I had Delta, oh, I had Alpha. You know, I guess the question I've got, Dr. Kelly, is unless somebody is specifically sending that result off to a lab to tell what variant it is, how do people even know what they just had? Or do they?
No, you don't. The CDC drops in and intermittently does testing in a geographic area to determine which is the strain of preponderance in that area. But the only way they know is by actually sending it to one of the labs that actually does genetic sequencing. There's no way to tell with a PCR test or with a home test which variant you have. Now, you can presume it based somewhat on your symptoms. For example, as I said, we know now that Omicron is the version that's going around that really stays just in the upper airways. It doesn't cause that deep hacking cough. It's primarily sore throat, headache, fever, and a lot of nasal congestion. So if people test positive for COVID and those are their symptoms, they would be led to believe at this point in the ballgame it's likely Omicron versus people who had the symptoms with the deep cough and those sorts of things. But again, unless you're sending it off for genetic testing, there's no way to say with certainty.
All right. When it comes to, you know, Steve, them hoarding this, and then what Dr. Kelly just said a moment ago about the differences in these results and so on, I guess the question I've got for you even is, are we ever going to get past all of this nonsense from the current administration and then the media? In other words, are they going to just run this thing to the ground to where they have no trust left, where you know, even politically speaking, it's just ruining them on that end of things? Or will they learn from this and adjust? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think we talked about this earlier this week, I think, when we exchanged a text. I think it's unraveling. Stories are unraveling. So, you know, Anthony Fauci said 25 times on TV that, you know, two shots and a booster would be a very effective solution. Now he's saying, I don't think we'll ever get rid of coronavirus. We got to learn how to live with it and manage it that way. The same thing's being said in other countries. I think it really depends on what's politically expedient for the people who are in power. You know, they make Trump the big bad guy on coronavirus, and now there's more deaths under Biden, and Biden said we're going to stop it, and we're not. I mean, it's just this political football. In fact, quite frankly, the teachers' unions, especially the ones in Chicago, apparently none of them get Omicron because they all need at least 10 days off if they get the virus. So it is the most politically charged issue, and quite frankly, politicians, I don't think most politicians even understand what's really going on. Somebody like Rand Paul would, but generally,
right,
it's just a bunch
right
of BS being used politically.
Steve, a question just came in, really probably more for you even than Dr. Kelly. I've got somebody that I know really well that is a subcontractor for agencies that are funded by the government. They do some contracting in the healthcare end of things, the world of medical care in general, not in a clinical setting, but more in a consulting setting, kind of similar to what even you do at times, Steve. Will these rulings from the Supreme Court affect those individuals? What are your thoughts?
No, I don't believe that those kind of people who do that technology work are governed by HHS from a worker perspective, from a rules perspective. They have to comply with HIPAA and other stuff. They're going to be governed under OSHA, and given the Supreme Court's decision on OSHA, I do not believe they will be mandated.
Okay. That's a great answer. One question I have for you, Dr. Kelly Victory, is, and Charlie sent me this, and he and I have been talking about this even off air, and I apologize, I have failed to let you and Steve know this, but RSV, which is a big deal. In fact, I got a vaccine for that because we have a new baby, and that's a big deal that can affect very small, you know, children, not me as a new baby, but a new grandbaby. But RSV right now in our school system in Colorado is spreading faster than anything COVID-wise, and yet we're hearing very, very little of that in the news media. What are your thoughts, Dr. Kelly?
That's been the case, John, for months now. Same thing. I said this a month ago. The huge uptick in hospitalizations on the pediatric side on the East Coast back in mid-December was almost entirely associated with respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, not with COVID. These are kids who are being admitted, and you are darn right. RSV is a significant risk to children, unlike COVID. Mm-hmm. RSV is far, far more likely, as is influenza, to end a child up in the hospital or in the ICU than COVID ever was. So yes, we are seeing a big uptick in cases of respiratory syncytial virus, but that's been going on since really the second or third week of December and really accounted for the big uptick in hospitalization.
Okay, dumb question, Steve, for you. Have we ever shut anything down economically or school system-wise for RSV?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
And I say that.
We haven't shut down anything in a school system since probably back in the 50s, even when if we had a major outbreak in, you know, the measles, chickenpox, polio. We haven't had anything like that in a long, long time.
All right. Dr. Kelly, somebody just asked a moment ago if any of these nasal washes, you know, there's peroxide, there's all sorts of other, you know, sort of home remedies, if you would. Is there any truth to some of those that are, you know, that are out there circulating around the internet in actually killing the virus and helping? I have my own thoughts, but I want yours.
Well, there's no question that these things are what I call virucidal. They will kill viruses. Peroxide will, dilute iodine, nasal washers will. I am not a big fan in general of doing those things because you can't just do it once. Presumably you would need to do it on a daily basis or whenever you're out in public and might have become exposed to it. And we don't have any long-term studies that show what's the impact of putting peroxide or iodine up your nasal cavity on a daily basis. I have suggested from the beginning, and I myself use simple mouthwash, Scope mouthwash, and any mouthwash that uses acetylpyridinium as the active ingredient. So that's Scope and a lot of others. Interestingly, it's not Listerine, but that is a great virucidal. And just simply swishing with mouthwash on a daily basis is something that can significantly decrease the viral load. And again, not just for COVID, incidentally, common colds, influenza, you know, these viruses are killed by that active ingredient. So my only concern about using the peroxide or iodine nasal washes is simply that it's one thing if you were to do it once or twice or three times, but when you're talking about doing it repeatedly, simply can't answer the question, will you disrupt the pH and other things like that to a point where you might have some ill effects?
Good point. All right, somebody just asked. John, go ahead, Steve.
John, so make sure we're clear here, because there's a whole bunch of literature out there now about povidone iodine, 1% solution. Kelly and I exchanged information about this week. Gargling with it and using it in your nose, you can't swallow it. The problem is that most of the time it's sold in a 10% solution. So now you're adding to the complication that you have to personally dilute it in order to use it effectively. I think Kelly's right. Use Scope. Use a mouthwash. I mean, it'll take care of all those things and your bad breath at the same time, and it won't be you putting yourself at risk.
Yeah, good point. All right, Dr. Kelly, somebody just asked, and I hadn't thought about this as well. I don't think we've ever talked about this. How long should somebody wait after having COVID to have surgery, or do they? Somebody just asked, you know, they've heard that at least 2 months because there's a higher morbidity rate for people that have had COVID that go under anesthesia. Is that true or not?
I certainly have not heard that to be the case. Obviously, you wouldn't want to undergo any type of surgical procedure if you were actively ill. But that's the case, again, not just with COVID. You wouldn't want to do that. They ask you when you go to have surgery for anything. I don't care if you're having a knee replacement done or anything else. They will say to you, have you had a fever? Are you feeling okay today? Before they risk putting you under anesthesia. But I am unaware of any evidence that you should wait for any prescribed period of time before undergoing, you know, having general anesthesia after having had and recovered from COVID if you aren't having any ongoing effects.
Steve, this is a question for you. What financial incentive do hospitals have for, in the case of right now, classifying patients, you know, even that come in for a broken arm but then end up in a hospital bed because they have COVID? Is there any financial incentive for hospitals today to keep doing that?
Yeah, I mean, there's two different payments that have existed. One is $13,000 for diagnosing it, and I think that actually applies whether you're admitted or not. And then there's $39,000 payment if you end up on a ventilator. Now, there's a lot of care that can happen between the time you're admitted with COVID and you end up on a ventilator. Hopefully, you never end up on a ventilator. I just recently, this week, John, I talked to a doctor at a hospital because my uncle was being taken care of, and they suggested that if he went on a ventilator, he'd have a 5% chance of survival, and he had COVID and pneumonia at the same time. Now, that's horrible odds, but, yeah, there is incentive payments for sure.
All right.
Absolutely. That's under the CARES Act, by the way, John. That's money that was made available under the CARES Act, and it's absolutely continuing to contribute to the perverse incentive for hospitals to upcode on these COVID patients.
Okay, makes sense. And guys, really, I also want to make sure that I leave everybody with this. We are not and have not prescribed anybody to anybody individually. You still need to seek medical care if, in fact, you feel you need it. I think all we're doing, guys, is giving out very general things that are going on in the world with COVID, with vaccines, all these different things combined. But, Dr. Kelly, I know you would reiterate what I just said. We are not prescribing anything specific to anyone, any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. One last question. Go ahead. Steve, go ahead.
I disagree with one aspect. The one thing we are prescribing is that people listen to John Rush on Thursday afternoon at 3 o'clock every week. Well,
thank you. I
there you go,
Steve. I appreciate that very much, guys. I got to run. We're at the top of the hour again, folks. If you miss any of this, you can catch it via podcast or tonight between 6 and 7 p.m. as well. But Dr. Kelly Victory, thank you so much as always. Steve House as well. Guys, you're the bomb. I appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
Happy
you're
to
very welcome,
it.
Guys. All right, have a great evening, and we'll talk to you again next week. Let's do this. Franktown Firearms is next, folks. One-stop shopping. Whatever you need at Franktown, they've got it there. Give them a call today. It's easy, 720-770-7777.
You can't not smile after firing Freedom Seeds. That's what the shop manager at Franktown Firearms calls bullets. You want the freedom of self-reliance. The negativity of the news makes your security feel uncertain. Whether you're looking to make your first firearm purchase or you're a master at arms, Franktown Firearms is here to cultivate a relationship with you as a client, not as a customer. Even though you may be a first-time shooter, Franktown Firearms has professional trainers that can get you to the experience level you want to be at. There's no cap holding you back. Training can be one-on-one or in a classroom setting because they customize instructions based on your level of comfortability. They include a rental firearm you can train with. You even have the choice to try before you buy when you're unsure what to purchase. The empowerment of a firearm is sure to help you liberate your smile in a seemingly uncertain time. Visit klzradio.com/franktown for more information. That's klzradio.com/franktown.
All right, folks, if you're interested in a reverse mortgage, it may be just your ticket. Find out all of the ins and outs of one by calling Bruce Simmons. In fact, you just heard him on here before we came on today because he's on Thursday. So 303-467-7821 or klzradio.com.
Ask Bruce Simmons to explain how a reverse mortgage line of credit could lock in your home's value. You've been hearing about the potential for housing prices to start dropping. But so far, all you've done is gain more value. A reverse mortgage line of credit eliminates the fear of decreasing home values. No matter what happens to the housing market, your reverse mortgage line of credit won't lose a penny. Let's say your value continues to increase over the next few years. No problem. Call Bruce back to refinance at the new, higher value for even more benefit. But should your home lose value, say we hit another recession like in 2008, you have the peace of mind that you still have the full amount of your line of credit guaranteed. Bruce Simmons has been doing nothing but reverse mortgages for 18 years. Ask him to explain how it works. KLZradio.com/reverse. Personalized reverse mortgage expertise.
All right, folks, and for all of your meat, given what's going on with King Soopers right now on the strike, don't worry about it. We've got you covered. Barber's Foods has everything you need. They can deliver it right to you or ship it to you if you're not in our area. RanchFreshMeats.com. Again, it's RanchFreshMeats.com.
Meat purchases at retail stores represent the largest dollar amount spent by consumers for food. Retailers want and need your meat purchase dollars because it drives their total sales and profits. And yet, if you continue to buy your meat at national publicly owned companies, you are supporting their shareholders and their corporate values. And just what are their values anyway? Wouldn't you rather support a local, family-owned meat company that is committed to standards and values that more than likely align with yours? RanchFreshMeats.com is locally owned by a Colorado native farmer. We personally know many of the families that we source our products from. Instead of supporting large corporate interests this year with your meat purchasing power, resolve to get your meats at RanchFreshMeats.com. Get reconnected to your food and where it comes from. Shop at RanchFreshMeats.com.
You're listening to Rush to Reason, brought to you by Absolute Electrical Heating and Air.
All right, and question of the day. I left that for last just so I can make sure we get everything done with Dr. Kelly Victory and Steve House. So yesterday's impossible question answer, the first time you could have this in your home was in 1997. What was it? That was actually Wi-Fi, believe it or not. Seems like it's been around forever, but literally that late 90s, early 2000s is when Wi-Fi became popular. So really only that long. It seems way, way, way longer than that. But today's impossible question, answer this on the RushToReason.com website. Can you name the activity that produces over 50,000 ER visits each year? Choices are high school football, bungee cord jumping, skateboarding, or rollerblading? There's your choices, folks. Again, answer that on the RushToReason.com website. All right, we got another 2 hours coming your way. Again, if you missed any of this first hour, you can catch it tonight between 6 and 7 p.m. If it's getting close to 7 o'clock, thank you so much for listening. We do appreciate it very much. Top of the hour, Larry Behrens is going to join us. He is the Director of Communications of Power of the Future. We're going to talk about gas prices, inflation, and, of course, the COVID at-home testing shortages. We'll be right back. Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560.